I'm opening?
We have an eye, part of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Anatomy of a Movie. This is Dimitri Panos. Hello, movie fans. Again, luckiest guy in the world I get sitting right next to me.
Aw, thanks. This is Sarah Stratton, guys.
Yeah, I'm paired up with, like, all women recently, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's been great.
We just did Alexander. Much different movie than what we have for you right now.
And today we're going to be dissecting, talking about Judging the Judge. Starring Robert Downey Jr., Robert Duvall, a really great cast. So why don't we open up, Sarah? What'd you think of The Judge?
All right, so I have to preface this with the fact that normally we have John Comerford with us, and I think I might need to start accepting his routine of going into movies, which is he just goes in without any knowledge at all. I don't think that's going to happen because I watch too many movies that have trailers, and I like to watch them. But the point I'm saying that for is I thought I wasn't going to like this movie. Everyone was just talking about...
Was it because of the trailers, or...?
A little bit. I wasn't thrilled by the marketing. I also had friends who were just like, oh, that movie's not supposed to be very good. And everyone was just like, it's 2.5 hours. And like they say it as if it's like the end of the world, 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. And so I went in like bracing myself to sit in this theater. And then I was really pleasantly surprised. About 20 minutes in, I was like, wait, I really like this movie. I think the acting was phenomenal.
Yeah.
My favorite part was I think that they had so many good relationships that, for better or for worse, I wanted to know more about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's bad because that it could have been longer. They could have given me more. It's good because they built up all the supporting characters enough that I wanted to learn more about them. I didn't feel like I did get to see their whole lives. Right. They were full people that were fully embraced. So acting amazing, some really good scenes, and just the different levels of chemistry between everyone was great.
Yeah, I went into this movie a little bit differently than you did. I was somewhat sucked in by the marketing because, mm-hmm. well, you have Robert Downey Jr., Robert Duvall. Mm-hmm. And the trailers, anyways, I felt showcased performance. And mm-hmm. I'm like, it showcased performance and emotion. And I was like, oh, this could be really good. Because, well, number one, it's out of Robert Downey's, what we're used to seeing him
his
in.
His wheelhouse.
And I don't want to say his wheelhouse because the guy has done so much. We're just associating him with what he's done recently, which is Iron Man, which is great. We love it. We've talked about him here. But he's done Chaplin. He's an Academy Award nominated actor, but it's good to see him get some breathing room. And when you put him up next to a great, like a Robert Duvall, and I was like, okay, I'm in. And I had heard about the runtime and all. And I'll say this. I liked the movie, but I really liked it for performance. To me, it was another example of a movie where performance outshined what I thought was a not such a good screenplay plotting.
Or the story. The actual.
Right.
What I will also say about Robert Downey Jr. is that I am a fan of his. And I was a little bit nervous that because of the marketing that it was like, it was him trying to be like, see, I'm a good actor. I'm mm-hmm. not just Iron Man, which can really blow up in people's faces because then they push too hard and they try to be too serious.
Right.
And they try to avoid the laughs and they try right. to avoid, his normal kind of douchebag appeal of Iron Man.
Right.
And so I was a little worried that that's what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And it didn't. It worked to his favor. He did show everyone, like, he can handle the material. And he does it with such a range within this movie
mm-hmm.
of being very affected by whoever he's with,
right.
about embracing the laughs, about having funny moments. And also one of my favorite character choices with him is there wasn't like, you knew from the very beginning mm-hmm. how sensitive he was to his father.
Absolutely.
So often we see in this character, they're hard brim. About halfway through, you realize why that really they're just a softy inside who mm-hmm. wants affection. The fact they let us into that early, that it was something he never tried to mask.
Right.
He never tried to mask that what he wanted from his father was love.
Nope.
That was there from the very beginning.
Absolutely.
Through the end. I thought that was such a brilliant choice by whether it was Robert Downey Jr. or the director. Like, that's so yeah. different. Like, we're normally not allowed to see that much that early.
Yeah, David Dobkin directing, of course, most known for comedies like The Wedding Crashers and such. You know, and again, for me, yeah, he was able to, for me, the way I looked at it is, he had breathing room. Mm-hmm. He could play a range of emotions, and all of which I thought he really nailed. Same with Robert Duvall. But going back to Robert Downey Jr., I felt that, you know, there were hints of his snarkiness, like mm-hmm. he is as Tony Stark. You know, he had the hints of that. But yet, some of my favorite scenes were scenes with his daughter. I thought them to be touching. They had heart, and I actually felt that they, father and daughter. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed those scenes. I liked his scenes with Vera Farmiga. The
chemistry was fantastic.
Yeah, the chemistry was really good, and I thought, again, he was really good. So for me, again, to watch him, and again, watch Duvall and other people. I don't want to leave out Vincent D'Onofrio. I don't want to leave out Vera Farmiga, even though she wasn't in the movie a lot. I don't, like, the kids, I mean, I thought, the other gentleman, why am I forgetting his main cast? Billy Bob Thornton.
Oh, Billy Bob Thornton.
You know, watching all these people in various scenes interact off one another, I thought was fantastic. And that to me is a reason to go spend 2 hours and 20 minutes, because you are going to see a movie with some good emotional performances. And some of the scenes too touched me. I'm going to throw this out there, because we'll talk plot.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit. To me, I was getting a little bit of a sense of deja vu, because it seemed like a long time ago, we talked about a movie. Let's talk about the plot points. So we have a man who's, his marriage is going to pot, we learn early on. He's a lawyer, he's a little bit snarky, has some personality issues. There's a death in his family in his hometown that sort of kind of brings him back to his hometown, which he hasn't been back to in years. We have this family gathering over a death in a family, and then personalities rub each other the wrong way, hijinks ensue. I feel like we've talked about this movie before. Oh, wait, we did. It was like literally a month ago with This Is Where I Leave You. A structure that we've seen.
Structurally very similar. I completely agree with you on that, like, what happens when people bond over mourning and it's
and they go back home and they
haven't
been
perfect. You still have to deal with all the issues. Just because you bond in one sorrow doesn't mean it fixes everything. We've seen it before.
We saw it before about a month. But I will say, they are two different movies. Mm-hmm. One was a little bit more for laughs. This one was much more emotional.
Mm-hmm.
Way more emotional. And then we find out, then you have to throw in the layer of the judge, played by Robert Duvall, Joseph Palmer, and his relationship with the son, and how he is with, you know, his relationship with the son and him being a judge. And then he's brought up on trial for a murder. So there's a little bit John Grisham-ish. There's a mystery. There's a trial going on in which
there's pretty much as much at stake as there can be.
Right.
This isn't something simple. This is murder. This is prison. And on top of that, he's sick.
Absolutely.
Things are as high stakes as they can get.
Yeah.
And that is what forces his son to stay, because it has to be at that point.
Right. And he realizes he has to. So I get all that. And it's weird, because to me, the trial was the least interesting aspect of this movie for me.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't figure certain things out. And there were two things that really bothered me, and we'll get into it. Robert Duvall's character, Joseph Palmer, who's a judge in this town for like ever. And he's a very, what would you say? Impartial,
influential? He's a very, I want to say he's the ideal judge.
Yeah,
he is the archetype of what he should be. This isn't a this isn't a character that we're supposed to doubt his honesty or
honor.
Yes. And, right, he does what he's supposed to do. He always has, and it has influenced more of his family in a bad way than it ever influenced his career.
Right, and steadfast in mm-hmm. his ways. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so this murder, you know, he's brought up because he may or may not have hit somebody on his bike, and we learn that the person that was killed in this accident is a former, way back when, mm-hmm. was somebody who stood in front of him in a trial that he had made a bad decision on.
I thought it was a really dynamic case in that, for me, how they set up all the story of what happened to him and how he did end up in the situation, to me, really makes sense and is something that is very plausible.
It made sense to a point. For me. Okay. And that was, you know, throughout the entire movie. Now, but then again, we learn, too, that he is sick. He's mm-hmm. ill. He has
cancer.
Prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. And colon they cancer. They talk about chemo brain because he's undergoing chemo treatments and such, which, okay, I've had some experience. I understand the chemo brain part of it, but here's the thing. It's not just... That character was so steadfast, and he remembered so many details that mm-hmm. probably may have been forgotten, but the one detail he can't remember is whether or not he hit the bicyclist.
Okay,
and he was able to remember details from like a week ago. That sort of bothered me.
See, this is where I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Sure.
Because I do know that it is very possible to lose touch of your memory. How they kind of softened that it wasn't just the hitting incident, for me, was that they also added the part about his bailiff. And that was something that was repeated and he couldn't get. Or
I understand.
When they had,
and that's remembering the name of the bailiff.
Yes, remembering right. the name of the mm-hmm. bailiff. Or when they showed how he dropped the eggs. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that was spurred by a regaining of memory. And it was kind of mentioned. He was like, it will all come back to me eventually. I just don't have it right now. So that, to me, kind of drew the focus off, it was his memory being affected. It was influencing his life. It was influencing long-term memory and short-term memory. And of course, the worst situation possible, it's like the one instance you can't actually get a grip on. But it does make sense because another side effect of the chemotherapy is spouts of anger. So that he got he had a spot of anger.
And he remembers his anger, and he remembers turning the car around. And
he didn't remember. Well, he
at the end, he more or less, without admitting it, he says, yes, I would have done that.
Yes.
He says that. So, you know, and that was another case in the point, too, where they say, well, it takes 9 minutes because he pulls out of the convenience store. Mm-hmm. He said he got to the mill, or he was driving to the mill. It was a stormy night. It was a dark and stormy night. And he turned the car around, and they were like, well, but it takes 9 minutes. And he was only going back 4 minutes. I'm like going, well, if he's lived there, that's not going to be an issue to me, because he would know that creek, and he turned around.
But it's court, and those things do get calculated so much. Like, to me, that was all very realistic. Timestamps and how they make these timelines, that was spot on for
I
how
get
they
that,
do
but
law
then Robert
cases.
Downey Jr., I mean, but the comeback to that would be, he's lived here all his life. We've had these storms before. Him changing at 4 minutes instead of going all the way down the 9 minutes, that doesn't make sense. It's irrelevant to the case. And also, the camera, that bothered me. And again, I noticed there was a security camera mm-hmm. that caught the guy coming in and everything. And then when they showed it again, it was from a completely different angle. And I was like, there was only like one camera. And I was like, okay, that's nitpicky.
There was three cameras in the gas station. That was a little much for such a small town. I agree with that.
So it just sort of kind of like, it didn't, to me, there should have been I wanted there to be a little bit more suspense in this mm-hmm. trial. I mean, because we got so much story out of the trial. We got so much out of Robert Duvall. We got so much out of Robert Downey Jr., that this trial ends up being, in a sense, it's a focal part of the movie. Would you mm-hmm. agree? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, as far as storytelling. So I just wanted that to be more. Now, I'm glad that what it's, what its ripple effect did, because we did get to know more about the characters, and it did, you know, there were some good revelations, and it gave us some great performances.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I was fine with the length of that, just because I think that if you did expand the court case, how would you have to go about doing that? And so to me, I was fine with how much time they had. It's such a long movie anyway.
Yeah, I didn't want them somewhere. To expand it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It could have been a little bit tighter put together for me, I guess. Just for me. Because there were so many other stories that were going on, and it was almost like they felt like, you know, there was 2 hours and 20 minutes, and there's a reason. There was a lot of story going on, right?
Besides the court case, I mean...
Besides the father, the court case.
Father, son, you have the whole family dynamic. Right. Each of the brothers had its own story. He had a very full relationship with his high school sweetheart,
right.
Simultaneously with her daughter, with his daughter, his wife. Like, there were so many things going on. For me, it didn't feel... I think the bad version of that is having too quick of scenes and having it feel like choppy and snappy.
Yeah.
I was fine. I thought they paced all of the stories very well. I think you're going to bring up that some of them could have more resolution.
Yeah, there were
and
two.
And I can agree with that. I'll let you get fully into it.
Well, we'll both get into it because maybe we could be on the same page with the same characters.
I know about your brother one.
Right.
Do you want to fill?
Yeah. All right. So Vincent D'Onofrio, Glenn Palmer. Mm-hmm. And again, Vincent D'Onofrio, the scenes that he was in, he was perfect for. He elicited from me the emotions that you wanted that character to elicit, right? Yeah. I mean, he was really good.
And I think that part of the reason that his story feels unfulfilled is because he did such a good job.
It could be.
He could have his own movie.
Basically, quick recap. You know, in high school, he was the star pitcher who's being scouted for colleges. Like, it was said a couple of times, he could have gone to the majors. And you learn in the movie that, due to, Robert Downey, Hanks, irresponsibility at 17 years old, they were both driving. He was a little bit inebriated, intoxicated. He crashed the car that his brother happened to be in. His brother, hurt his arm so bad that he couldn't, he couldn't go back to baseball, which is tragic within itself. And a couple of things. I never heard, like, I would have liked to have seen Robert Downey's character, Hank Palmer, say something like, I know I blew it for you or something. And it might have made sense for having the Glenn Palmer character, like, could have taught baseball. Like, I don't know. It would have been nice to maybe he's a coach on Little League at the very least. But he was, oh, no, I'm at this store and I'm not happy. And I get it. It was almost laid on thick. And D'Onofrio did it great because I felt for him.
Mm-hmm.
I felt for him. But I just wanted a little more resolution there at the end with those two.
Other than
a hug.
The one thing that I'll give that is that I wish there... Because I chalk that up to... We have a huge time gap between mm-hmm. when he leaves and where we are now. It's been years. He went to college. He changed his whole life around. He had a wife. He had a kid. And I put it to the fact that they've already hashed out that fight. It's something that they've both been able to move kind of beyond. And obviously there was lashing out on both ends. You do get the end snippet that these... the late Meester's character is actually his brother's daughter, and that never gets addressed with the brother either.
No.
And, like, that to me was the part of that story that could have also come up, is that just gets swept under the table that your brother slept with your high school sweetheart right after you left. But I'm like, well, these brothers have been through obviously a lot together. Maybe they've already fought this out. Maybe it was so hard to find their peace that he doesn't want to rehash. I did have to create that into my head, though, and it wasn't shown to me.
Yeah. I'm right there with you.
But that is
there's one other thing that you're forgetting that totally, it's still dangling there and it bothered me a lot, but go ahead.
What?
No, it's where in the lines that you're thinking of. Think of one other, I mean, it's sort of kind of when you think about it, it's sort of kind of major, and it's like...
Did he made out with his niece?
Yeah, there's a little bit of incest going on here, and it's like, yeah, okay, I'm going to be okay with it. And yeah, I have this relationship with the mom, and how am I going to... To me, it almost seemed like they were reaching a lot. Like, throw in like this incest thing, but...
But he didn't know it was incest.
But he learned.
Yes.
It's incest. And you're like, okay, what are we going to... Wow, that they threw that matzo ball on the table and they just said, okay, there we are. And we're going to be sort of okay with it.
I was fine with it because it was funny.
It was
I was fine with it.
Incest
like,
is a gas. Keep it in the family.
When he pulls out of hooking up with her, mm-hmm. and she walks out of the room, and then he goes, I made out with your daughter. I thought it was hilarious.
It's almost like, I'm Batman. Batman.
They couldn't quite address it. So that to me was how it was kind of left on the table. It was like, it's this very big elephant that you don't know is in the room. I don't want to poke it. Like,
yeah, they didn't. Yeah, it was. It almost seemed like they were reaching.
There was a lot. There was so much there that in order to bring up that, they would have had to bring up their whole history. They would have had to include. If there was resolution or not resolution from the car accident, if the brother blamed Robert Downey Jr., if the brother blamed him, if he really felt guilty, like, there was so much in that conversation that it's its own movie.
Yeah.
That I kind of am like, okay, I understand. This is more, it is family movie, but it's the father and son dynamic.
Right.
I mean, you get that one beautiful shot about a third of the way through the film where both the judge and Hank part separate ways. You have the car right in the middle with the family, and it's beautiful. And of course, we lose the frame right as the actor's about to go off, not knowing which direction the car goes, and just leaving that family stuck in the middle of these two just stubborn mules of people heading their own directions.
Yeah.
In a small town where you have nowhere else to go. So
And let's talk about small town. Look at the film. I agree with you. Movie, I felt, was shot beautifully, both interior and exterior. Shouldn't be a surprise because Janusz Kaminski, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correct. He's a very frequent Steven Spielberg collaborator. And he, the way he shot this entire film was beautiful. Again, another good reason to see the movie, I think. We'll talk about the small town, which was supposed to be
Indiana,
mm-hmm. right? Indiana. But it was actually Shelbourne Falls in Massachusetts. Everything comes back to Massachusetts and/or Star Trek. But in any case, yes, it was filmed in this very small town in Massachusetts. And Dobkins, he's saying, he goes, this town personified like Norman Rockwell for me. Mm-hmm. I wanted that kind of thing. And the waterfalls were beautiful. Like, I would have breakfast at that cafe with the waterfalls on the outside.
Stay there for a week.
I would love to go to a place like that. It really, truly is beautiful. And it gave that nice Rockwellish kind of small town appeal and feel that, makes you feel at home. But then again, the undercurrent of things aren't always great.
I love that they did give it that beautiful, especially exterior shot feel. We're talking about...
And it was in scope, too.
Yeah. We're talking about all the outdoor shots. It was lovely. It was a town that you didn't pity people for staying there.
No, you didn't.
So many small town movies make you do. It's like, you're like, why isn't everyone leaving? Why didn't everyone get out? Like... This town portrayed why people stay.
Right.
Like, why you felt at home, why you loved it, why you saw the beauty. So I really like that with all their external shots. And then internally, and they utilize a lot in the marketing as well, like the browns and the grays
absolutely.
And the color of the courtroom.
It was very fall.
Fall and it was dark and it you kind of just felt like there was this pressure on it versus so often where you can go the opposite and it's like that very like minimal, stark, everyone feels so distant from each other courtroom. Like it's everyone has power in the room where they speak and it's just like the little specks around.
Right.
Versus this one, they all felt like they were so close together that when the witness was on the stand, when the judge was there, when you had all the lawyers, it felt compact.
Yeah,
absolutely. The pressure of the situation instead of very... stark and like
no and again I to cinematographer, I mean, it looked beautiful. And you know, you do bring up a good point regarding small town too, because I think we've gotten a recent flux of small town kind of movies. Nebraska comes to mind. And again, in those movies too, those are a social, comment, you know, economy hitting the towns. Mm-hmm. And we can see it in the news today. And it is, you know, like I said, This Is Where I Leave You takes place in a small town. And it looks like the kind of town that it's a nice small town. And I think of movies like Funny Farm and or Doc Hollywood. Like, that's the picture that many of us, maybe I do, you know, when you picture small town kind of living. And you're right. We at least get to see, or the past couple of movies we've seen, they're the kind of towns where you understand why the people aren't moving out.
It's like, and you don't have every door creaking, something's not falling apart.
Right.
Like, no, this is a peaceful place where they have beautiful things, mm-hmm. where people have been able to create their own lives and illustrious careers even in their small towns.
Yep.
And they've been able to make things of themselves even in these little places. So I really, really liked that.
Yeah, it captured that. Mm-hmm. And again, I think Janusz Kaminski's filming of it mm-hmm. was just beautiful. And like I said, interior and exterior. There wasn't a shot that I felt was wasted or overdone. I think some of the criticisms have said that it's like too much, too broad, too over the head. But for me, I don't mind. I like that sort of kind of, I thought he captured it mm-hmm. pretty well. And I think the town was very much a character in this movie too. Because it housed all of these, you know, things aren't perfect in this small town, but we all still kind of get along and we're going to resolve our issues and we enjoy being here. And, hey, let's face it, the little girl, Robert Downey Jr.'s daughter, when, you know, she comes to stay with him for a while, and again, very touching, heartfelt moments. And when he's bringing her back, she's like, best vacation ever. Like, you know, best vacation ever. And, you know, it was nice. She had a great time in the small town too. So
no,
I think anybody could have a good summer and or fall there.
She was adorable.
Yeah, she was really, really good. Well, I guess we can further talk about...
I wanted to bring up a little bit. We talked about the amazing acting in this.
Absolutely.
And we talked about how every character was well built. But there also has to be credit to the casting.
Mm-hmm.
And to how this was cast and how these actors went into this work, into these roles. I know that the director had mentioned he is a director that believes that, not all directors believe, that there is one person right for every role.
Right.
I don't even know if I'm on that page, but it's something he believes in. And I think, to his point, this movie was cast perfectly.
Absolutely.
For me.
And
absolutely amazing. He had Robert Downey Jr. in mind from the very beginning.
Right.
He always knew that this was a role for him. But originally they had talked about having Jack Nicholson in the role of
right.
the judge.
Mm-hmm.
I love Jack Nicholson,
right.
but I think that Duvall, what it seems is he was more of the second runner up for this. I think they ended up with the absolute right person. We can get more into that, but he was a great fit. All the brothers were a great fit. But from the very top to the very bottom, I'm talking about to the CP, to all of the officers.
Oh,
I just thought this was amazingly well cast.
Oh, yeah. And This Is Where I Leave You also had Dax Shepard in it. You see Dax Shepard again. He was good. And you know, you're saying something, too, that I think that's worth mentioning in the making of this movie. You know, Dobkins... As I said earlier, this isn't the type of movie that's in his wheelhouse. He was a comedy guy. Mm-hmm. And
might know him from Wedding Crashers.
Yeah, you might have seen that movie.
Just a slight
comedy.
He
talked about the change-up, which actually sort of kind of goes into a couple of things, because we talk about marketing a movie. And, you know, but Dobkins, number one, reading about him, still to this day, one of his favorite movies that he's done was Clay Pigeons, which starred Matthew Vaughn. So you can sort of see, oh, okay, that's how they met. That's how he can get into Wedding Crashers. Great film. But Dobkins is self-admittedly says, I don't have a funny bone. Like, that's not the kind of movie I really wanted to get into. It was, but it fit and I was getting work and hey, why not? He said the change up for him sort of kind of changed things for him. And so when this came along, this movie, The Judge, was the type of movie that he wanted to make these family dramas.
Mm-hmm.
And, which I find very, you know, which it's the irony of Hollywood. You do one thing good, and everybody says, well, that's the only thing you're going to be good at. I had no problem with his direction in this movie. In fact, I think he did really well, but it's funny how, like, this all came about, and then, like, you know, getting Robert Downey Jr. and his wife, and this being Team Downey's first produced picture. So,
first feature, yeah.
First feature.
Together as a production company. As a production, yeah.
as a production company, yeah. And to me too. So that means right off the bat, Robert Downey Jr., it's his baby. Mm. Dopkins wants to do his best for his new boss and mm-hmm. who's going to star in the movie. Duvall apparently passed. Like, he didn't want to be.
One of the reasons he passed was because of a very memorable scene for me, and I think for a lot of people, the shower.
The bathroom scene. Yeah.
Scene. Uh-huh, uh-huh. He read the script and was kind of like,
I don't know if I can do
no,
that.
No, I'm yep. good.
Didn't appeal
Thanks.
To me. And yeah, and it was David Dopkins.
I was actually really surprised that he passed on that, just because that's something you don't hear a lot about. You hear a lot of people passing because they're either busy or they don't
buy the character.
Yeah, or they have, but just point out kind of a specific scene and be right. like, this is why I don't want to do it. Especially from an actor who is so well respected mm-hmm. and doesn't seem to have a lot of right. like, I won't do this because it's too productive or this because it's too scary. Like, he is a actor who loves his craft.
Yep.
And so you don't hear I feel like it's just very rare for an actor to be like, nope, I almost didn't choose this script because of this scene and the nature of this scene.
Yeah.
And then that I being agree. Said, I think that they shot that scene very well.
Yeah. It was it's a powerful scene mm-hmm. that again, I think works because of the performance. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a shock value. There was, like, you know, the duty in the pants, mm-hmm. we'll say, which is like, you're like, holy shit. But figuratively, mm-hmm. I mean, and you just go, the reason why what cements this scene is their performances between father and son, Robert Downey Jr. and Robert Duvall.
Performances, yes. Performances, because there was no,
didn't disrespect.
From Duvall, there wasn't, yeah, he was just there. You didn't see him being self-conscious.
Oh, yeah.
And Robert Downey Jr. for just giving so much and not being self-conscious.
Absolutely.
But then also a little bit on direction, because it wasn't like close-up focused. We weren't True. Getting their it wasn't about their No. reactions to this. This wasn't a scene about, oh, how is this making this person feel? Are they feel awkward? Do they feel ashamed? It was focused on them together.
Yes.
It was the two shot. It was the whole bathroom.
Yep.
If you have to think about, if they're filming this and you have a close-up of the shit on the floor, and then you go to a close-up of Robert Downey Jr.'s face feeling right. uncomfortable, that is a completely different
atmosphere.
Scene.
So, yeah, I was going to ask you. So, I mean, to me, the emotional punch of that scene was, like, the latter parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
When he has him in the bathtub and they're putting the shower on and they're leaning up against the wall. Yeah, the two shot that he filmed, that David mm-hmm. Dopkins filmed, and the way that it was performed, that was the emotional punch of yeah. the scene. It wasn't, you know, again, for comedy, it would have been the shit on the floor. Yeah. Ah, it's disgusting, but they have it. You're a little bit like, oh, but the scene plays out, and when you see them together,
mm-hmm.
that to me was the emotional punch of that scene.
And the scene
and it could have gone the other way.
Yeah, I just love so much about the scene, so I could just talk about it probably for too long. And I'm sorry if I am. But then to add in also the knock-knock jokes, to go and bring right. the daughter in, which at first I was like, oh, what are they bringing the daughter into this to make comedy? But they didn't really switch it to full comedy.
No.
It switched to, like, you got a bond between them
right.
where they're coming up with an alibi
uh-huh.
as to why she can't come in the bathroom
yeah.
about how it was off of each other of, like, there's stuff on the floor and the dad's, like, feeding him, like, what yeah. to say. It was just a really good moment.
And there was an innocence to
yes.
it as well.
And
yeah.
it was just, like,
and it was sentimental.
There are certain points yeah. when you kind of forget about all the hostility towards each other.
Right.
You're kind of forgetting about shame, and you're just dealing with answering those questions.
Again, and I go, that's one of the things that makes the movie worthwhile. Mm-hmm. Now, again, that scene, like, and you're right, Duvall turns the script down. Scene didn't appeal to him. David Dopkin and Duvall's wife said, you got to do this movie. And then, you know, once I decided to do it, and, you know, he goes, you do it. And David Dobkin said this great compliment to Mr. Duvall, in which he said, once he committed, he was all in, like 100%. And we did not talk about that scene. We just did it like any good scene. You kind of just do it, let it find its own rhythm and identity, which it does. Mm-hmm. And I always try to find a bit of humor to offset it. So everything that you were just saying, and either vulnerability or humor is very important in movies. And I think they offset serious scenes, and you have to, you know, you can't, even like a movie, even the most heaviest movie, something breaks a little bit of tension. And it doesn't have to be a slapstick comedy note.
It's just people generally want to break tension.
You have to. Like, you have to take a breath.
I feel like it's in comedy where people want to live in the awkwardness. But in a drama, things are normally bad enough.
Right.
You don't want to stay there.
Right.
Like, people themselves want out of the... they might say something stupid. It might end up offending it more or making it worse. But they try.
They don't. And to bring up this point for David Dobkin to say this, too. Some of his inspiration for this movie were these two movies. Kramer versus Kramer and Ordinary People. Let me tell you, folks, if you haven't seen them, they are knee slappers. Again,
from the guy who doesn't have a funny bone in his body.
Like, these movies... they're heavy movies. They deal with heavy the divorce, suicide, and the psychological effects and how we can tear down a family, Ordinary People. But even in those movies, there is a little bit of heart there, and there is a little bit of, like, I'm not saying they're comedies, but there's something to break the tension a little bit in both those movies. And it's really funny when I was reading that those two movies were movies that he said I grew up on, and those are the kind of movies that I wanted to make. This is as close. I don't think it's as good as, but I see, now I understand his influence and how we put all of that into The Judge, because it is there, especially when you're looking at those movies. So I think he did a really great job at that. When we talk about Downey and Junior, there was one thing I thought that was really cool. Did you know that the both of them actually did a 90-minute improv together, sort of in character, but not? And this was like almost like a rehearsal for David Dobkins. And they just did a 90-minute scene together. And I do quote, in character. But they just wanted to see how they would work off one another. When they were done, David Dobkins says, okay, next up, let's go to set. Because we don't have to do anymore.
I hadn't heard that story.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful acting exercise. Yeah. I think that can give you so much, because then you actually have to live in the thoughts of your somewhat character. If you're actually searching for your words and your sentences coming from thought, yeah. I'm sure you learn a lot about what they're thinking and how to fill in any gaps of where you're not given dialogue by giving an exercise like that. I think that's a brilliant move. That makes sense to me, because I know from Robert Downey Jr.'s perspective, Robert Duvall doesn't really like to have a lot of the actor talk. He does like to run the scene, to improv off of each other, to let it flow and find its way. He, from what Robert Downey Jr. said in an interview, so not Robert Duvall's perspective, but from Robert Downey Jr.'s, he said that Duvall doesn't like to just sit there and discuss, which some actors do. Some actors want to take things and go and dissect the beats and the breath and the pauses and which way you're gonna look and the tone. They want to rehearse it 50 times to get a rhythm. And Robert Downey Jr. was fine with letting Duvall go by his method, and he bounced off it and he just played with it.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure if that's how he normally works or how he normally works, but he was willing to kind of he said he had trust in Duvall. He respected him.
Yep.
And he said that's the foundation of a good movie, and be able to have chemistry is respect. And so he kind of just fit into that mold.
Yep.
Which is something you have to be like, wow, good job.
I agree. And I think it was reciprocated. I think that Duvall, at the end of the day, and listening to him do interviews too, he found a great respect for his producer, his boss, and his co-actor. There was another sort of kind of cool thing that I learned, and it was from a Howard Stern interview. Howard Stern had Robert Downey in this past week, and amazing interview. Gets to talk to him for about an hour and a half. But one thing, you know, they talked about preparing for the role. And one of the things that Downey said, he's like, and I'm paraphrasing, he said something, well, now I try not, he goes, I don't really prepare all that much. And he, and Howard was like, really, for those scenes? Like, how do you go in? He goes, well, you know, I read the script. He goes, sometimes he admitted, he said, sometimes I have an earpiece. And he goes, sometimes he's like, you're not afraid of like flubbing up a line? He goes, no. He goes, sometimes it's that edge that I need. He goes, but I have an earpiece in, and it's not uncommon somebody could feed me a line. And I'm like, holy shit. I said, really? I said, I would never guess.
I would never know.
And you know, and then he puts in his thing. It was actually that to me was the highlight of the interview. That and his weird science stories. We'll save that for when we do weird science as a throwback. But, he is, to me, Robert Downey Jr., is another actor that, I think, I talked about this, like, Jen Gardner, when we talked about Alexander and the Wicked Bad Day.
Jennifer Gardner,
Who grew on me.
Yeah.
Robert Downey Jr., I early on, I never really liked him all that much as I love Weird Science. But he was in a couple of, like, stinky movies, and you always heard about his attitude and doing all this stuff, and I guess I never really respected him, and it wasn't until later on, and then learning about his struggles and what he overcame, and then watching him act in other movies, seeing him in Chaplin and more dramatic roles, and then just coming into himself and being able to be self-retrospective, and look at himself and being able to become a better person and working off of whatever weaknesses. And, you know, even before Iron Man, you know, and I thought Iron Man 2, you know, whether that movie lived or failed, could be by the actor that portrayed Iron Man, and he was so good in it, but you gotta give the man props. I do. Yeah. He's garnered my respect, in such an immense way, because I think now he turns back and he wants to do good by people, and he wants to do good for people, and he loves his audience. He even said he loves doing promotion. He goes, this is one of my favorite things. He goes, I got a movie. And of course, he's the producer, but not so many people, like, you know, Bruckheimer will go out and stump for a movie and such. But
it's like, you wonder though, part of that comes from, because I thought about this a little bit.
Yeah.
He has had such an amazing turnaround in his life. And I'm sure that maybe, even if he doesn't prepare all that much, I'm sure that comes into effect maybe in some way for movies like this, where you do have characters who have had their own struggles. But I wonder if that also even like relates how he talks to press, because I'm sure if you've been slandered by the press for years, when people are saying nice things to you and actually want to know what you think and aren't just making up opinions about you, I'm sure it's a lot better.
Yeah. No, I agree. And
but it's great that he's found all that positivity
happily,
in it.
Yeah, and he's happily married, you know, apparently so, and they're about to have a child.
And they're making great projects.
Yeah, and they're making, you know, and they're off to a really good start in this movie. Let's talk about a really good start, and I want to get back to Vera Farmiga because she has a funny story. I'll just say it now, about kissing Robert Downey Jr. while her co-boss was on set. Uh-huh. And she was like, yeah, it's sort of kind of awkward. She's like, sorry, the wife is on set. And yeah, and I had to get into this kissing scene and I had to sit on his leg. So The Judge opens, it opened on October 10th, released by Warner Brothers. Now its production budget, I was, surprised to learn $50 million. About $50 million.
And I mean, so that's,
and you have lots of talent. I mean, from
that's the point. It's like Robert Downey Jr., I believe within the last couple of years was one of the most high paid, if not the highest, of the highest paid actors in all of Hollywood.
Oh, with the money he's making off of the Avengers and Iron Man.
I want to say he might be the highest paid after Iron Man.
Yeah.
I could be misspeaking on that, but I can tell you he's in the top. So for a $50 million budget, I know it's a lot of money, but it's not.
It's not. Not
with the cast involved in this.
Not with the cast.
The locations, the
Janusz Kaminski. I mean, come on. So $50 million. It was $80 million all in. So that's hard drives, advertising. Now, here's the shocker to me. Going into this movie, I really felt that the marketing was going to pull in that older audience somewhat. And I thought it was going to do better than it did. It opened up at number 5 opening weekend. Yeah. And I was a little bit shocked. And I think it was something that you said right off the top where you said, well, 2 hours and 20 minutes or 40 minutes. It's a long movie. I was bracing myself.
You're carving out 3 hours of your day to see this.
When you throw in trailers. Yeah, absolutely. So it made, its opening weekend gross was 13.1 million. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not setting off any box office records. Its total gross to date is mm-hmm. around 18. Worldwide, it's about 20. Now, here's the interesting thing. Rotten Tomatoes got at least I last checked, 47%.
Which is low, in my opinion.
Low.
And I think that it was rated too harshly.
Yeah, it was low. I think it's almost about 50-50 if you want to give mm-hmm. If you want to round it up. Mm-hmm. Now, but it got an A- in CinemaScore. One thing that I've been reading a lot about this movie is that audiences are really loving this movie. Like, they're not the critics. They are, I think they're pretty much your average, your average novice moviegoer. They don't see as many movies as you or I go mm-hmm. to see. So I think it's a crowd pleaser. I think that the older audience that sees this movie, I think they're going to get emotionally involved and attached. Mm-hmm. An A- means that the audience is really liking it. Robert Downey Jr. has been doing something really, I think it's wicked cool, on Twitter. He's asked people to tweet him what they thought about the movie and, you know, if it affected whatever, and then he retweets it out. So he's been somebody's been retweeting these things.
That's awesome.
I'll give it him the benefit of the doubt. And there has been one constant in reading a lot of them. I took my dad to this movie, or I called my dad after I saw this movie, or this, and this is something that I could relate to. I could talk to my mom. I could recommend this movie to my mom. And my mom isn't an avid moviegoer. She goes to maybe 2 to 3 movies a year.
Oh, wow.
Maybe.
That's shocking.
No, maybe. And
to be your mom, I'm a little shocked.
She doesn't go, you know, this little Greek woman. She'll go, but she'll always go. I'll tell her, I went to the movies. What did you see? And it's always like, well, is it nice? The movie for her has to be nice. That's it. And there aren't that many. I can't go. No, you're not going to like Gone Girl. Gone Girl's not a nice movie. The Judge. Right. Underfoot Journey. But The Judge, I could say, Mom, go see The Judge. You will like this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, you will get emotion. You will come out and you'll like it. It's for a rated R movie, and it's rated R for language and whatnot. And I'm glad they didn't shy away mm-hmm. from that. Mom will think it's like a nice movie. She'll get emotionally involved, I think.
I agree. I think that this is a very crowd-pleasing movie. I think that it's interesting, being that they put $50 million into it, we talked about how it's not a lot for the actors, and they're not getting the return, really, in the box office. But normally what I feel that studios want, if they're not going to get the money, it's because they want the acclaim.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie was targeted for Oscars, for whatnot.
Right.
What I think is the good point is that this is, I forget the official production name, but the Downey's production.
Team Downey.
I think this is really good for their first feature. I think it represents them well. I think it's going to serve them well in getting more projects and mm-hmm. getting people involved. I think for them it was a very smart business decision. I think for Robert Downey Jr. it was great for his career. I don't think it hurt anyone in the acting scheme.
Oh.
I don't think it hurts anyone in how it looks. Like, it is a good thing to put on your resume because it is a pretty well-made, well-acted film.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree with you. Mm-hmm. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more because, again, we talked about this, too. You know, and I have to throw a little bit of kudos out to Warner Brothers. You know, they're going through some turmoil now. It was a big deal was announced this week that Warner Brothers is going to let go of a ton of people. They haven't had the best summer mm-hmm. going. But I'm going to say this. Last year I said it about them. They know how to market a movie last year. You know, they had Gravity. It's tough to come off the year that they had last year. It's tough to replicate that. But going into this, they have been releasing movies that Hollywood has sort of kind of been shying away from. We talked about it because they were also the same studio, I'm pretty sure, that did This Is Where I Leave You. And we talked about how Hollywood's not making these kind of movies. They're also not making these kind of heavy family dramas anymore that were very relevant and were popular, say, in the 70s and the 80s. People went to these kind of movies a lot. And so I say kudos to them because they're thinking above and beyond the franchise picture, which
yes.
they have. But, I like the fact that somebody out there is trying to release, or at least giving the shot. You gotta take chances in this town. If, and again, I do think that 13, I was surprised.
And honestly, I thought it was going to do more. I think it's good for your actors.
Absolutely.
I think that actors need those. They need those movies that are, a lot of actors will tell you they do get into it because they want to make a difference with the story and impact. And yes, you can learn so much from a franchise Marvel movie, and I love watching them.
Same here.
But that's tiring and exhausting. And if you're an actor and you're looking to really get into a story, yeah. Not that you're not getting into those, but you want other Rangers and material.
You do.
So you need them out there.
Absolutely.
And you need movies like this.
I agree.
So on that, I think that it's going to be good for all of their careers. I don't know about if they're really going to get the attention.
I don't know.
Were aiming,
I mean,
for from say the Oscars. Or
yeah, the only thing that I can look at is performance by either one. Like it wouldn't, you know. I mean, Duvall for I don't know whether he goes under Best Supporting or mm-hmm. Best Actor, either one of them potentially. But like you said, and I think I said earlier, I think what this gives for Robert Downey Jr. it gives him breathing room. Mm-hmm. It says, okay, I could take a break from Iron Man. Mm-hmm. A much deserved break, and I want to do this. And this is going to be my first project, and it's a project where I can stretch out my claws and just, I can act and...
And honestly, it's a great example. In the future, uh-huh. for anything he wants to do, yeah. For him to be able to say, well, this is the movie we made, this is what I've done, this is what I did when I took a break, it is a great piece of evidence, or... It's a great piece of support.
And it's something, too, script. Like, it's not going into... I mean, a lot of people will take the indie route, which I get, mm-hmm. don't get me wrong, Chris Evans, you know, you take the indie route, that's fine. Robert Downey Jr. is in a position where he can go the main studio route. Kudos for
and
him for doing so.
Yes.
And he did a really good job. And again, I cannot take away from performance of this movie. It's the one thing that really shines and really, I think, emotionally, as an audience member, I got emotionally invested because of the performance. That drew me into the story. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, coming from David Dobkins, you know.
Yeah, I think their performance was great. I don't know if I can, just because I'm the type of person who I want to see everything that's going to come out through December before I like put right. all my chips on something. I'm going to be very interested how this performance is going to stack up
right.
to our other leading men that are going to come out this
yes,
this winter.
And that's what we have.
But at least it's making a notch in my memory where I'm like, ooh, this movie had good performances.
Absolutely.
This is the one I can go back to. And mm-hmm. I'm comparing leading men to these roles.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm thinking about. I'm going to be thinking about this movie.
Right.
I can't say he's going to win. I can't say that it's my front runner and that it's blown me away from all movies ever, but I can say that it's right. stuck in my head.
Yeah, and again, we talked about this too when we talked about even going back to This Is Where I Leave You, Gone Girl, this movie. The one thing that they all have in common is they're all rated R. They were all rated R movies. Targeted to specific audience that wasn't the teenage audience. No offense to the teenage audience, pardon me whatsoever. I just like the fact that there are that the studio, well, it's been Warner Brothers for the most part, that okay, let's you know, we can have rated R movies that'll appeal, mm-hmm. you know, 20th Century Fox and Gone Girl. Let's make a rated R movie because, you know, those people will come out if you make a good movie. I think with an A- that the judge might stick around. But if you notice, like, we've got, you know, upcoming movies like Fury, another rated R movie. We've had a slate of rated R movies coming out. And it's not a bad thing. Don't ignore this audience because, you know, when it hits, they are likely to part with their cash at the box office and at the concession stand to see quality mm-hmm. product. And you open your eyes when you get a Duvall, you know, maybe they're not so familiar with the Robert Downey Jr., but you can open your eyes to all these other great actors, Vincent D'Onofrio, Vera Farmiga, who I love. Again, I hated her character so much in Up in the Air that it turned me off on her. And then I started seeing her in her interviews, and then I just like completely love her in Bates Motel. Mm-hmm. She's great. So,
and she did a really,
and she's
job
a really good job in this movie. So it's good that these movies are coming out for, like, we're not just hitting franchise movies.
Yes.
You know, you're not going to franchise The Judge, you know. Oh, you know, but speaking of,
but
like, continuing on.
They did put potential for a sequel.
Well, let me ask you. I'm glad you said that because, okay, what was your interpretation of the ending?
It was just very, very, it was clear from the moment he started spinning that chair that it was going to land, that it was either going to land in front of him or completely in the opposite direction. And it was really funny because there was one cut of it where the chair was slowing down and I was like, it's not making it all the way around.
Spin the bottle.
And then they put like two more shots on it and I was like, this is a different chair spin. You're not fooling me. But it just like, I was like, I know. I saw that. But it lands right in front of him. And you know that it's like, okay, let's put in the points. He has a girl there.
Mm-hmm.
He's embraced that he's finally from there.
A girl who he's sort of kind of macked with his daughter, who's his brother's daughter.
Who's his niece.
Yes, is his niece. Yeah.
It's his niece.
In simplest terms.
It's his niece. But he's embraced the fact that he's from there.
Yep.
And now the chair
is empty.
Is empty and pointing in his direction. It adds up that he could have a very successful life in this new
when he did go back home, he had that change of heart. He had the Krumholtz there. Mm-hmm. He had the conversation with him where he again it ended with the visual cue of throwing the trash in the wastebasket at the beginning where he did it. He goes, you know, guilty people or non-guilty, you know, can't afford me or something to that effect, and I always win. And then at the end, he accepts that he can lose.
Yeah,
and that's not a bad thing. So I too took that.
You took it as this was where maybe his next step in life was going.
He's
going
to apply for the job.
Yeah, and see how it goes, and who knows, cause some chaos. But it was like sequel. The one thing they had me fooled on.
No,
I went before. I don't know where we're going to jump to next, but I thought a very funny moment slash right. One that sometimes I get ahead of myself in movies and I'm watching a scene and I'm like, I know where this is going. Like with the chair, I was like, it's landing at your feet.
Sort of kind of felt the same way.
I was like, you know what's happening.
Right.
But in the boat, which is a very sad moment, when he finally gets the recognition from his father and they're fishing and he has the caramel or the honey.
It's bit of honey.
Bit of honey.
That's what it was. Bit of honey. Yep.
And
it was my bit of honey, old man.
You know, he slumps over. And I was convinced that he was, maybe it was just because of like, I wanted him to. I was convinced that he was just going to like wake up because there was a prior scene where we got to see the archival footage
right.
of the brother
right.
where he is slumped over and then
right.
the child you version
thought he was
of,
sleeping.
Of, yeah, the child version comes and he like scares him. So I totally thought that was going to happen. I was going to be like, it's a parallel. He's fine.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't. And I was like, oh, I was so wrong. And now I'm so sad.
Yeah.
But I thought it was sweet.
It was, and again, you buy into it, I think, because of the actors. Mm-hmm. And what you've seen 2 hours and mm-hmm. 15 minutes prior, you've got emotionally invested. strange coincidence, later on that evening, went to a 40th birthday party. And it was a throwback kind of a party. It took place on the Queen Mary and, people can dress up like in the 30s mm-hmm. and 40s. So the people who dressed up the tables, they had like old fashioned kind of candies, including a box of bit of honey.
Mm.
And I was like, hey, like, we just saw this.
Just like, saw- I don't know if this is making me happy or making me relive the sadness.
Well, I remember bit of honey was big in Massachusetts. I don't know if it was big out here, but I remember bit of honey. But that wasn't like as soon as the candy wrapper fell in the boat, I was like, oh, okay. You know.
Yeah.
It was a nice scene though. It was done very nicely. And again, let's talk about, I want to talk a little bit too about David Dobkins, because again, this is the kind of movie he's always wanted to do. He comes from comedy, and I had mentioned that The Change Up was the movie for him that he was like, that just said, okay, I got to go do what I want to do. And it wasn't that he had a miserable time on The Change Up, but he did mention, I mean, the movie, he directed the movie that he was initially told to make, and then he goes on, and it's a great story about how he said, Universal, their marketing was strict PG-13. And he had made a rated R movie. Not that he cut the movie to make it PG-13. It went out rated R. But the marketing, He said, did not advertise that this was going to be a raunchy comedy. So within the first couple of minutes of the movie, when a raunchy scene happens, he said it really, people were really off put by it. You know, the movie was not a financial success, and that basically, he said.
When you limit your marketing like that, it pushes failure. Because what you're trying to say is that everyone's going to be happy, and then people go in expecting one thing, and guess what? If you're expecting one thing, there's only 50% chance that you're going to be happy. And the people who are really upset, and the people are some of the people who are most vocal about how they feel. So you're just putting yourself up for disaster by being like, this is going to appeal to everyone, when you know it's not. When the movie is very directed and you're trying to make it sound general.
Yeah, and it's almost like a bait and switch.
Exactly. And then people are going to be mad. Absolutely. And then no one's going to come because they're going to see the reviews and they're not going to show up.
Yeah, no, agreed. And but for us and the judge, I get, you know, I mean, at least for him, he was like, at that point, I just thought high point comedy, just something I wanted to stay away from. He's also thankful too, because now at least he got different questions. He didn't get, well, what made you laugh on set? What was the funniest thing that happened?
Someone should just go in and ask the same question.
Yeah,
what was the funniest thing that happened on set of the judge?
It got like, what inspired you to do this? And he also talked about, you know, his relationship with his mom and how it at a time in his life was tenuous. And, you know, when the judge came along this project, it did make him, you know, he had since, I guess, reconnected at some point. But this movie brought up a lot of those emotions. So I say good for him. We already talked about the cinematography, which was just, I thought, beautiful. It was beautiful. You know, you want to go there. We did talk about Dax Shepard a little bit. I mean, he was, you know, it's good to see that he can not just be a comedic foil. I mean, he was good. His parts were a little bit comedic, but... You know, I like seeing him on screen.
I think he did a job.
And we talked about Vincent D'Onofrio. He was really good.
He's amazing.
And is a good character actor.
Also, just to let you guys know, Robert Downey Jr. also loves him.
Yeah.
And, well, he loved both the people playing his brothers. And he was just like, when asked about what future projects him and his wife and team Downey were going to be making, he was like, I don't know, as long as Vincent's involved.
Yeah.
And like, made that much of an impact. It was just like, he can just be in everything.
Yeah.
How is he going to participate?
And he's good because you, just by looking at him, he can emote a certain way and make you feel a certain way. I mean, which is really good. And he's done that throughout his career. Vera Farmiga, we talked about. Jeremy Strong played Dale Palmer. Now, I didn't necessarily get the whole story as to why I guess it was natural, from him, but you know, that too is a scene that if you want to be nitpicky or want to be a critic, you can say, oh, you got to have the slow person to get the sentimental thing. I thought the way that Jeremy Strong played that character and what he lent to the role was great. I didn't think it was played over the top.
I thought that it was very well done.
Yeah.
I thought the actor did it very well.
Did a very good job.
Yes, it did use some of the... it did use it for some humor, situation, but I think that's accurate to real life.
Yeah.
Because it's like when you have a kid say something ridiculous and you go back to the saying, well, kids say the darnest things. Yeah. Like, it's just true because he was just so honest and it didn't feel forced. On top of that, I also like how they played with this character between the brother relationships.
Yes.
And how Robert, Hank was very sympathetic and very caring about his brother, and also that related to how he was caring about his daughter, and you did see that this hard-ass lawyer did have a heart, and that it was Glenn who would get fed up, and that to me is accurate, because he is there, he has been there for years.
I'm the older brother, stop patting me in the back. Like, that was a really great scene.
Yeah, and there's so much where it's like, no, this feels very truthful to me. I don't think that it was believable.
Mm-hmm.
It was believable and it was realistic, and I didn't feel like it was put there because it had to be there. It was just part of their lives.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have to throw out there, because we know that she has her fans. Leighton Meester was in the movie for about 10 minutes. You know, a comic role. She was fine. Almost anybody could have been in that role, but it ends up being a pivotal role. You know, as to the outcome, you know, all in all, even Ken Howard, who played the judge, you know, all in all, you know, Team Downey did put together a good crew of people to work on their first production. And you know, high marks go again for look of the film, the editing. I did the length. It was long. It was a very long movie.
It's a long movie. You sort of kind of feel it. The last third's a little long.
You sort of kind of feel it. I don't know.
Not horribly, though.
No, but there's just a lot of story. There was just a lot of story. Maybe something could have been cut out here or there. I don't know. It is a long movie.
The only way to cut this, I think, anymore was to drop a full storyline.
You would have
had to drop a full plot point. Yeah. Like, you would have to completely eliminated, like Leighton Meester's character, for instance.
Right.
Or CP's character. Or, like, some... It wasn't, I don't think, based on, like, you need to trim scenes.
Right.
It wasn't in, the shot was too long, the pacing was off. It wasn't that. It was just that there was so much story to make this any shorter, some chunk had to be removed.
Yeah, I...
And I liked all the chunks, so it's good.
I couldn't agree with you. I mean, I'm just saying that for me... It sort of kind of felt it was starting to almost out
you wear out its welcome. It.
Yeah. And now, you know, from the editorial department, you know, this Mark Lavolsi, you know, who'd worked on movies like Almost Famous, Devil Wears Prada, well, Meet Joe Black, another very long, that's a long movie. But he did do Wedding Crashers, so he knows how to cut a movie. You know, I thought he did it. Listen, given the material that they all had, trying to put into a story, and again, this isn't the kind of movie we get every day. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that they did a pretty decent job. Now, as far as the screenplay goes, you know, we have this Nick Schneck. I can't pronounce his Schenick.
Yeah, I don't know him.
Who was a writer in Gran Torino, which again, a very character-driven movie.
Also very interesting working in... That's a very interesting place to be. Looking at Gran Torino, looking at this film where there's higher-ups involved in both in front of the camera and behind the camera.
Yes.
So when you look at... And who you assume have very strong opinions.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Clint Eastwood. Front of the camera and directing. Robert Downey Jr. executive producing and starring. Like... To then be, you know, adding in for that, you have to be very kind of flexible with who they are, get to know them very well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure they have their opinions.
Yeah, and knowing that he wrote Gran Torino, which is a very character-driven, I will say it was a lot more economical. It was a little bit of a shorter movie than this movie. But you do at least, so you see at least where the drama comes from and how it's very character-driven. You know, the music was fine.
Fine, yeah.
You know, it wasn't anything... I believe the gentleman who did the music was the same gentleman that did one of our favorite movies, Saving Mr. Banks. I want to say Thomas Newman. I could be wrong. Let me look that up just so... since we do have a little bit more time, we're going to wrap things up in a bit, but I want to make sure that I get my things right. But the music was fine. It didn't do anything that was... I mean, it kept the movie going. He did Skyfall. He did WALL-E, Lemony Snicket, Shawshank Redemption.
That's actually very surprising to me because Skyfall, obviously, and WALL-E are so musically centered.
Saving Mr. Banks. Well. Maybe I'm thinking of Thomas Howard or Newton Howard. But, yeah, I mean, doing Shawshank Redemption as the composer, so he knows these kind of dramatic movies. He also did Lemony Snickets. And again, one of my favorite, he was in the music department, WALL-E.
I love WALL-E as well.
So Thomas Newman is really good. So again, all of the tech specs in this film were great.
Team building, A+.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's what you want Downey. If you're going to come out of the
great job,
and that's what you want when you come out of the gate.
Yeah,
and again, I'm not gonna. For me, the movie was. I love the performances, the look, tech credits, Robert Downey Jr., Robert Duvall. It is worth spending 2 hours and 20 minutes just to watch them go. You will be emotionally invested in one way, shape, or form. Maybe more than me. Maybe less. I don't think I agree. Some of the criticism was a little bit harsh. I'm going to nitpick on the story. That was my biggest downfall of the movie, but nothing else. I mean, if the acting sucked, then it goes into making me angry territory. So your final thoughts on the movie?
Final thoughts. such a great piece of acting work. I think that I'm very happy I spent my afternoon watching it. I don't know if I would recommend it for, like, the sunniest day on the planet, because it's not going to leave you feeling too cheery.
Yeah.
But if you just want a movie to just, like, get invested in and really just sit back and you're there to watch and think about afterwards, like, you will be affected by it, go watch it.
Did you, did you see it with your parents? If not, did you recommend it to your parents?
I did not see it with my parents. I would recommend it to my my mother. My mom might take it the wrong way and be like, are you saying that we have a problem? And I'm being like, no, I just want you to see a movie.
That's not good.
I'd be like, go see this movie. It's about a tumultuous parent relationship. She'd be like, what?
No. Yeah.
But I totally would have her see it. I'd actually recommend it more to my stepdad. I think that it's more up his alley.
Yeah. I mean, and as I said, I'd recommend, you know, if she's looking for a nice movie, I'd say, well, the movie out right now, The Judge. Go see The Judge. It's safe for you. You'll get into it. So, and I've recommended the movie, and we've talked about it here with other people, and I've said the same thing.
Yeah.
and you out there, our audience, you tell us, what did you think of The Judge? Are we overly judgmental? or are we just mental? You please let us know.
Don't give them that option. That's all they're gonna write.
You know what? If I didn't say it, one of them would.
True.
So, there we go.
We admit.
Where can we find you, Miss Sarah?
You can find me here at Anatomy of Movie. You can also find me on Schmoes. Guys, look us up. Also on ABTV. I'm just all over the podcasting world, but not on Twitter. Sorry.
You can find me here in Anatomy of a Movie and at DMovies1701. Wanted to thank you so much for listening, watching us. We love this. We love talking about movies. Hopefully you do too, and that's why you tune in. We've hit over 1,000 subscribers on YouTube, which is awesome. So thank you very much. It's all because of you. Till next time, see ya.
Producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.